Welcome to part two of our conversation with June Lundgren.
If you're in hell and experiencing, you know, what we, you know, view as hell is whatever it is, being extremely tormenting, why wouldn't there be more takers, I guess? Wouldn't that you get there and you realize, oh, all that shit they told me about that was really bad really is here? I think I'd be the first to like, turn it around. I don't want to be here anymore. Hey, I'm here. Take me out. You're right. I was wrong.
You'd be surprised at the soul's stubbornness. I mean, people think that the soul is perfect. It's not. It's just as flawed as you or I are. It's just flawed in a different way. And some of them are hoarders. Some of them refuse to change. And therefore, if they refuse to change, he may go from that limbo in the dark realm to the limbo in the light realm, until he, you know, learns his lesson one way or another. The archangels are in charge of the limbo, the solitary confinement, so to speak, and they're constantly watching. They're constantly checking on them. But there are some that have been in there for thousands of years. It's like, nope, not changing. I'm still going to be an asshole. Sorry.
How does this cycle work? Because we talk about, okay, there's the limbo, there's the higher end, the heaven, and there's the hell, which is the below the limbo of hell. And we talked earlier, too, about people coming back or animals coming back and learning lessons. Is learning the lesson when you come back and you live your life out again and then you go back and then you kind of see where you fall, or are you learning that those lessons on the other side?
What happens is, say you live your life and you die. Okay. And you go to the other side. And once you get there, what you do is you review your lifetime. But you review it from not just your perspective, but from the perspective of everyone that you had a relationship with. Whether it's just your best friend, it's your mom, your dad, even your dog or your cat or your goldfish. You know, you see their perspectives. You understand it. You review it. And then you make the decision, well, I screwed this up. I don't want to do that again, or, you know, I should never have done this, or I should have done that. And a lot of times the soul will stay over there for a few years to just kind of try to figure out what it wants to do and if it wants to go back or not. It's entirely up to the soul whether it goes back or not. Some want to stay and said, that's it. No, I'm not coming back. Screw this. And you get other ones that say, yep, I'm headed back. You know, I want to experience this time. And a good example is my husband in his last lifetime. By the way, my husband's one of these people, if you can't touch it, feel it, or see it, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
Until he married me. He's an auditor, so he's very left-brained. But he died in his last lifetime. He died on the Arizona.
Okay.
He had a dream three nights in a row. He says, and he came to me and says, I'm on the ship. I'm walking through water like you walk through air, and we're below decks in the rec room, and there's a bunch of us down there. The big topic of conversation is, why didn't they come for us? Because they left those men's bodies entombed in the ship. He says, and then I'm up on the monument, and I'm running my finger down, and I'm looking for my name. He said, when I come to my name, I wake up. See, he says, can you get me a list of the men that died on the Arizona? And I'm like, okay. So there's 18 pages of people that died on the Arizona.
Yeah.
Get to page 13. And my husband comes and says, this is me. This is who I was. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah, this was my name. And the name that he had in that lifetime was Raymond Arthur Roby. And I named my son after my grandfather, Ray Arthur. There's no such thing as coincidence.
Wow.
And in this lifetime, he died in 1941. He came back in 1945. So that's a very quick turnaround. In this lifetime, he has an absolute fear of drowning. He cannot swim. is too afraid to learn to swim, but he's never even had a slip in the bathtub. But that's the holdover from that lifetime.
Sure.
So he's come back again to try to get rid of that, to let go of that karma. And we went to the Big Island. We went to the monument. Mm-hmm. And once he was there and seen it, he let go of it. He let go of that fear. But like I said, he's very left brain, so he's always going to hang out at the shallow end of the pool.
Sure. When a soul returns, is it still in our continuous timeline, or can a soul return? Let's say, you know, you're choosing, you want to go back and you're in the 1940s or is something like that, or even into the future, or is time still playing a factor, as you just pointed out in that case where one died and then came back just a few years after?
It's difficult. Their concept of, they don't have a concept of time as we know it. Mm-hmm. They can see the future. They can see the past. They can interact with the past. They can interact with the future. But they tell me that we cannot be born in the past again.
Okay.
We can be born in the future. We can be born in the present. But we cannot be born in the past again. That lifetime that you lived there, it's kind of like double jeopardy if you were to go back and live a lifetime where you lived in another physical existence in that same lifetime, you know, mm-hmm. in that same time frame.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it would create glitches or something.
Yeah, it would create a paradox. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't have that.
That's an interesting thought about the paradox. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. Maybe you have some answers. The thing that's obviously been fairly popular and talked about in the last couple of years, the Mandela effect, where we're looking at things from our past and we remember them completely differently as a collective. Mm-hmm. And there's some that can easily be explained. And you can understand, well, the psychology of it and how memories are brought back and it's always being reconstructed. But some are just so stunningly just bizarre, where you would just 100% believe it was one way and not the other. Is that something? Is that a paranormal, or is that just a flaw in human thinking when people are having these experiences?
It's a little of everything. Okay. The human body has soul memory, right? It has cell memory, right? Mm-hmm. It has cell memory, like kind of like when a starfish loses a leg, you know, it grows another one. Cell memory. Mm-hmm. Okay. There is such thing as cell memory in the soul. The soul has cell memory. So it remembers, and it has, it's like deja vu. It has all these memories. So each time you incarnate, all those memories are still with you on the soul level. And that's what kind of happens a lot. People will say, like, what, the three faces of Eve, you know, she had like what, 17 personalities or whatever. Uh-huh. But what people fail to realize is those personalities are for one for each lifetime that soul lived. It's not like, it's hard to explain, but, you know, say you're a monk, a Franciscan monk,
yeah,
in the 1100s. And then you're reborn in 1988 and you start having, you know, this need to become a monk or become very spiritual. It's just overwhelming because that lifetime is encroaching upon the present lifetime. All those soul memories are there, and something may trigger it, like a fear of drowning, like with my husband. Mm-hmm. Some people fear of flight, you know, heights, because like I was strangled to death in one lifetime in 1945. And so I can't stand to have anything around my neck. Mm-hmm. And so you have that. And I know the reason for it. But most people have unsubstantiated fears, and they have no idea why.
Yeah.
And it's usually because, 99.9% of the time, it's from a past life.
Fears, and would you say interests, too, where someone has just kind of bizarre fascinations with some things?
Mm-hmm.
And nothing I'm saying that's bad, but like, for example, when I was a child, this is pre the movie, Titanic. I was enthralled with this thing. There was not much out about it. There was a National Geographic special, and that was about it. And a lot of books in the library that were in the adult section that I had to go have my grandpa help me check out.
Because you were a survivor.
That's what I was always wondering.
Your name was Tim.
My name was Tim.
Timothy. You were a survivor. You were a young boy.
Well, that's very interesting. I've never had anyone say that to me. It's something I've always wondered.
I can see the child. He's wearing like knickers and his shirt's kind of torn and stuff because he's getting into the lifeboat. Somebody's handing him. He can't be more than 5 or 6 tops, red hair. Got like one of those caps that they used to wear that, like, to me, it kind of looks like a sailor's, old fashioned sailor's cap, but it's not. I can't remember what it's called, but I see him there. And he's afraid, but he survives. But that memory had always remained with him throughout his entire life.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was deeply ingrained in him. It was traumatic.
Yeah.
It was traumatic enough that the soul stored it.
Because, yeah, the fascination, in first grade, you do an art project. I was doing a giant construction paper Titanic. And I knew how many people were on the boat, and I knew about this and that, just so many things like a first grader shouldn't really have knowledge of.
Right.
And I was just so in, and to this day, I'm very interested in it. And I have one of the floor tiles from its sister ship Olympic in my house that I bought at auction once, but it's just always been this thing. The movie I could care less about. It's always been, and older ships of that era, I've just always looked at them and just thought they're just so something. I can't even tell what it is.
That was the era in which you lived.
Yeah. How interesting. When you were able to do that, like you just did, and you said, my name was Timothy, and those visions that you had, are you able to tell more about who that person was? What did they do in life? Or anything like that?
Yeah, if they're older, you know, with you, that was, as the child, what sticks out is the child's memory.
Okay.
The events of...
The trauma.
Getting on the ship, being on the ship, and then leaving it in such a way. But, you know, that's the part that's overwhelming. That helped me to link in. But I know he did grow up. He lived to be 72, and that's about all I know from that.
How interesting. Wow. Never had that on the air. I don't ever ask for anything like that, but sometimes it just happens in conversation. So that was very compelling. When we were talking earlier about shadow people, and before you could see them clearly, you were, or not shadow people, the demons, you were talking about seeing them almost as shadows or dark masses and things of that nature. Shadow people, something that a lot of people have talked about now that the term has become more mainstream.
Yeah, it's become kind of like a catchphrase.
Exactly.
Almost. But people, you know, I've had people that like, what is a shadow person?
Yeah.
Where do they come from?
From my listening to thousands upon thousands of stories over the years on my programs, what I've come to conclude is that not all shadow people are demons or demonic. It's sometimes, in what I understand, it seems to be that it just kind of is how we're perceiving whatever that entity is. Maybe anything, but that's just how it's coming across to us.
What's your take? Happen is like, I was called into a children's theater.
Okay.
And they were telling me, oh, there's a 7-foot shadow person and he's scaring the kids. And we need you to go in and take it out. And I'm thinking, okay, shouldn't be there in the first place, but all right. So I get to the location and I'm like, and here comes this quote unquote shadow person. And I'm like, And then I said, show yourself. And it disappeared. I did no longer perceived it as what it wanted me to perceive it as. Instead, there's a short, fat, balding dude. And he's like, you know, I told him, I said, knock that crap off. I said, you need to stop doing that. I said, I'm going to send you home. You don't need to not even be here.
Uh-huh.
He never got any respect in life. So he was darn sure going to make sure he got respect in death. So that's why he was showing himself as a big, bad shadow person.
Are they in control of how they are perceived?
They can project. See, a lot of people don't understand that a demon, an angel, a spirit, they can show you an image in your mind, and that's how you'll perceive it. They show you the image they want to be perceived as, whether it's big and bad, or whether it's a little child or an animal. You know, they can make you see them as they wish to be. And they can't do that to me, but for a split second.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only long enough for me to see what others see. And then I see the true being.
How interesting. And that's not just with demons or angels. That would be you
human
or me
spirits.
If we were dead. Yeah.
Human spirits.
It's an interesting concept. It's almost like you're going around as a giant green screen or in a green screen suit. And then you can choose to the people like, okay, here's how you're going to see me.
Right. I want you to see me as a big bad gangster.
Sure.
Bad guy.
Yeah. Would that be how sometimes when people come back and someone has an encounter with their grandpa or something of that nature, you often hear, and he looked like he was 35.
Yeah.
Okay.
They can make you perceive them as a lot of times they will make you perceive them as they were in the happiest time of their life.
Sure. They're going to pick when they thought they looked best.
Yeah. Or they'll make you perceive them as your memory of them was. Like my grandma. I see my grandma as I saw her when she was around 60.
Mm-hmm.
She died about 69, but when she was 60, and she looks young and, you know, younger and stuff, but that's how I see her, and that's how I want to see her.
It's very interesting. When you had told me that you died and you went and saw some things on the other side, tell me about that story.
I was, I had just met my husband. And, well, it wasn't my husband at that time, but I just met him and I was going to teach him how to ride a motorcycle because I had two bikes. And I was on my way out to his house with the bike I had just repossessed because somebody didn't pay for it. And I was going to teach him how to give him one of his first lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming around a corner and the light turned green and I went through the light. And a woman came and ran a red light and hit me on the bike. So I went flying across to the other side of the road, landed up against a brick wall. I wasn't wearing a helmet. At that time, we didn't have to wear a helmet. And I was clinically dead for 2 minutes. And there was a cop a couple of cars away. And he was trying to assess the situation. But I was on the other side. My grandma and grandpa were there waiting for me. And Michael was there. And Michael's like, you need to understand who and what you are. I said, yeah, I'm just me. Because I'm just dead, so I'm still thinking like a human.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, you don't understand. And so he says, come. So he took my hand and we went over. This whole place looks like clouds. We went over. And he waved his arm and this like bay window appeared. And he said, look. So I looked through the window and I could see every living person in the world. And every one of them had a string that led up to where we were. And he said, you see the ones that are lit up? I'm like, yeah. He said, those are the ones that have made the soul connection, the spiritual connection. The ones that are dark are those who have not made that connection yet. I'm like, okay. And I said, well, if heaven is real, what about hell? So he took my hand again and we walked a few steps and he waved his arm and this black pit appeared and the screaming and the pain coming out of it. It was like people were reaching up out of molasses, trying to escape, trying to ask for help. And then he waved his arm and it disappeared. And I'm like, okay, so hell is real. Okay, I get it. And he says, you need to understand who and what you truly are. And then he touched my forehead and I saw all these lifetimes flash. It couldn't have been more than a split second. But each one of them was like I saw the entire life, but it only took a split second. And he says, this is who you truly are. He says, look upon yourself. And I looked down at myself and I no longer looked like me. I looked like him. I was like 7 feet tall. I had a 12-foot wingspan. I had like dark auburn hair and blue-green eyes. And I was like, I had a sword and an armor. And he says, this is who you truly are. I said, your soul belongs to Ariel, the archangel. She was resent. She was sent down to live human lives until she learned to have compassion for mankind. He says, she was called in to remove a demon from a woman in 1198 AD. And she was upset because the woman had summoned the demon. And when she went to remove the demon came forward in the woman and said, you know, you'll never get me out of her. And so Ariel just reached in and ripped the demon out of the woman. And the woman died, the body died, and the soul was released to heaven. But God was mad about that. He said, you have no compassion, you have no care. And Ariel argued and said, you know what? She summoned it, and then she asked us to do her, you know, clean up her dirty work. She said, they have no respect. Humans have to learn respect. He said, you're going to go back and you're going to relive human lifetimes until you learn to have compassion. So Ariel's pretty stubborn. So this is life number 131. So she's good this time. She gets to go back for good. But the way Michael explained it is your body was created as a vessel to hold the soul of Ariel so that she can do the work she needs to do in this lifetime. So it's like, okay, it was hard for me to come to terms with that. I had no clue who Ariel was. And, you know, I'm like, okay. Now this was when internet was young and you had dial-up.
Sure.
You're like, okay. You know, so there's really not much in that you can find about Ariel other than her name means Lion of God. And she is one of the five that guard the throne of God. But what people don't realize is she is a demon slayer and she's a protector and defender of heaven. She is part of the group of elite archangels that are demon slayers known as the Legion of Light. Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Ariel are the Legion of Light. When she's down here, they stay in constant communication with her and they help her to transition and to do the work she needs to do. So I'm like, okay. I was like, but how do I do this? You didn't give me a manual, you know?
Yeah.
And he says, you'll see. Michael says, you'll see. I'm like, oh, great. And I got a call from my sister-in-law. She said, listen, there's something wrong with your brother. He's acting funny. His eyes go black. And that's not him anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, crap. So I'm like, okay, I'll come down because they lived about 30 miles away. I said, so I went and had coffee. I told her, call me, just let it ring once and hang up so that I know that he's home. So about an hour later, I get the call. And Michael says, just park outside of the house. I'm like, okay. And he says, get out of the car. I'm like, okay. He says, I want you to call the demon to you. I'm like, what? Are you out of your mind? He's like, do as I say. I'm like, okay, fine. I said, you got my back? He's like, yeah, we got your back. And so I said, demon, come forth. And I saw it come through the wall of the house towards me, and it's getting closer and closer and closer. It couldn't have been more than arm's length away when suddenly my consciousness went to the back and Ariel came forward. And I heard her speaking to the demon in Aramaic, because that's the language of the demons. And she told it, stupid demon, know you not who I am? And the demon was like freaking out. And she reached over and she grabbed it by the throat and said, I know you. And then she killed it. She sliced it through with a white light sword. And then her consciousness went back and I was in control again. And I said, I told Michael and Gabe, I said, you did that, didn't you? I said, well, you had to learn that she would always be there. She would always go forward whenever there was a demon present. Says she protects the body. You never have to worry about that. So ever since then, you know, I don't have any fear of demons. They don't scare me. I have no fear of them. And you can't. When you're dealing with a demon, fear is a weakness. And if they know that you're afraid, you're never going to be able to do anything. You're never going to be able to help the person. So you cannot have any fear whatsoever. And that's the problem with some people that try to remove demons, is they have that fear, and the demons know. They reach into your mind. They know what you fear. They know what you love. They know how to get to you.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with June. Big thank you to her for joining us and sharing her perspectives on today's episode of the program. And thank you for supporting us and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.